and got the church going. And they wrote him, had several questions they needed to ask him while after he left. And the questions are starting at chapter 7 about what do they do with the marriages in the church. And then chapter 8, what do we do with eating things offered unto idols? And so 8, 9 is another addition topic to that. 10, moreover, he throws another idea. He takes it even into 11. And then at 12, he starts the next topic on spiritual gifts. And then 16, he starts the last topic that they ask him about. So let's go ahead and pray, and we'll see what we can come in up here with. Lord, I do pray and ask you to help us to understand your words. I do pray and ask you to help us know how to apply them. And I ask that you'd help us to, that the Spirit of God would be our teacher and guide, that our hearts would be sincere to try to learn this word. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, in chapter 8, he got going through the idea of eating meat offered unto idols, which we don't really have an issue in our culture. But that is a big issue in especially Oriental cultures. And in chapter 9, he starts off with a series of questions. And evidently, and this is normal, evidently there are some folks in the church of Corinth that was questioning Paul. Okay, and to question somebody is not bad. That's not a bad thing to do. It depends on your attitude or your motive. But they're questioning him, challenging him. And possibly saying, what gives you the authority, blah, 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 blah. And so Paul just starts off with a series of questions. Okay, he doesn't defend himself. And that's the problem. Often when a pastor or whatever is challenged, questioned, if it becomes a fester in a church, you know, what does a pastor do? If a pastor publicly defends himself, people will interpret that as he's a bully, or he's insecure. Okay, I know one pastor that is insecure. He's got issues going on, so he's gone to the members and asked them to sign a document that they won't talk about. Okay, like that's going to do any good. What are you going to do, sue if they don't keep the document? The preacher out in Colorado, he had anybody that wanted to serve in the church, meaning if you wanted to work in the nursery, sing, do anything in the church, you had to sign a document that was the beliefs that he had that you were complying with them, and one of them was you couldn't own a television. So I didn't care. The convictions were mine pretty much anyway, so I threw a John Henry in there. I didn't care. And I just thought, kind of insecure, you know. And so what does a pastor do if he just lets things go publicly? I would dare say let things go and let God take care of it. It's faith in the Lord. And you might be surprised what the Lord will do sometimes when there's something brewing, and just give it to the Lord and let him take care of it. The tendency, sometimes if there's a fester in a church where it's usually one party, if there's a trouble in a church, it usually can be traced to one party or two, often a husband and wife team. No matter how big it gets, it usually is traced back to one or two. Several years ago, I was preaching in somebody's church, a friend of mine, and I was preaching on how to have peace. Peace in your heart, peace in your home, peace and so forth. And peace in your home, peace of God in your home, I mentioned the word submission. As soon as I mentioned the word submission, it was almost like a fog came over the whole area. And I'm thinking, whoa, I could sense it. I hit something. And I just kind of waded through the fog and got done. And on the following, let's see, that was a Sunday. And the following Tuesday, the pastor called and said, hey, brother, the Lord used you. I said, well, praise the Lord. He said, we lost 7 families. I said, really? He said, one you. He said, it was a mother and a daughter that were trying to run the church. They're trying to run me off. They didn't want a male-dominated church. And he says, as long as I'm here, that's what's going to happen. I was just the tip of the iceberg, or the straw that broke the camel's back. And he says, church is better off. They were a miniskirt crowd anyway. But what does a pastor do? My parents helped start Community Bible Church in DeMott after we got out of the Dutch Reformed. We had a real good man for 5 years, and there were some folks that were just a thorn in his flesh. And it was just one or two. He felt led to leave. And I believe that he shouldn't have left. Of course, I have an advantage of hindsight. And after he left, it seems that he struggled the entire rest of his life, because I think he got out of the will of God. And I could understand the temptation. I understand it, because if there's a blister on your toe, you don't think of anything else but the blister. If you got a sliver in your hand, you don't think of anything else but that sliver. And so what a person has to do is you got to overlook the sliver, the blister, and look at the faithful people in church. You're not defending your position. You want to be faithful for the faithful. So you're overlooking the troublemaker. Okay? Why? For the sake of the others. So I've learned that through the years, people have different reactions. So Paul starts off with a series of questions. He says, am I not an apostle? Okay, the answer is yes. Am I not free? Okay, free under the Roman culture. He was freeborn. Okay, he was not only freeborn in that realm, he was free where he was a single man and he can go anywhere he wanted. As far as what he was serving the Lord, he wasn't tied into one church congregation, okay, in that matter. He says, have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Yes, he did. That's Acts chapter 9. He did see him, and he was probably personally tutored by Jesus Christ down on Mount Sinai, where it seems that Mount Sinai is where Moses received the ideas and doctrines for the religion of Judaism. And it seems that Paul also went down to Sinai, because it says that he was down in Sinai in Galatians. And I dare say that's where he had a personal tutoring time with Jesus Christ, where Jesus Christ took the Old Testament and he said, Paul, you're going to take a lot of these things and then we're going to make some changes for the New Testament. Okay, and so that's very unique what he had. He says, are not ye my work in the Lord? Okay, so you go back to Acts 18. That's where Paul went to Corinth. He spent 18 months there, which was a long time compared to the other places. And so he's the one that personally the Lord used to get that work going. He says, if I be not an apostle unto others, yea, doubtless I am to you. For the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord. Okay, that was his confirmation to them. He says, my answer to them that do examine me, so there's the crowd that's examining him, is this. Have we not power to eat and to drink? Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Do we have the power to lead those folks? Well, yes, we do. He does have that power. Cephas, the Apostle Peter, another name for Peter. Or I only and Barnabas, have not we power to forbear working? Okay, forbear working in the context of him working to provide for his own needs. Okay, so the answer to that is yes, he can forbear working. Why? It gets into the idea that he can live of the gospel. He can be paid for his times of going into churches and like what we do, love offerings for missionaries and things like that. Okay, we can do those things. Now, on that idea, he says, have we not power to forbear working? Now, Paul continued personally. He personally continued to provide for his own needs. Okay, in Acts chapter 20, verse 34. Acts 20:34. Now, As far as the ministry goes, a lot of these, especially Fundamental Baptists, they will often, back in the 70s and 80s, they had a big movement going. Churches were getting large numbers of people, and they always wanted to get a Christian school going. And the Christian school teachers lived below the poverty level in most cases. Okay, and a church that has a Christian school, they want to keep the tuition low to help people, but then they don't have the money to pay the teachers, which is not right, to make them live on poverty level. Okay, and then people often will take the Christian school tuition and put it down on their scale, and they won't pay it. And what does the church do? Oh, you can't go sue them. You're not Christ-like. And so a lot of times these people don't even pay the bill. And so then that makes it worse for the teachers. When I taught in a Christian school in Colorado Springs, I started off, that was being 1985, January 85. My annual salary was $9,000, and I got $1,000 for a travel allowance. And thank God that I was taught financial savings from my dad growing up, because I had to rely upon that a lot of times. And when I left Colorado Springs, we were the poorest as we'd ever been, because we'd kind of used up our savings trying to help that situation, okay, or help or be a blessing to the church. And what that church did, what the pastor did, is they had a budget program, but they had priority 1, 2, and 3, which I kind of follow also. But priority 1 in that church was his salary, his car payment, his house payment, his telephone, his school bill, his... you name it, it was his. And if we didn't get past priority 1, priority 2 was building, insurance, and all the building up. Priority 3 was assistant pastor, youth pastor. So often the scale didn't get down to 3, and you were out. Now, that's what the program they set up. That was their business. He started a church. He can run a church the way he wants. No questions for me and that. I just... my mind said, well, if I get in that position, I ain't going to do that. Okay, and so it was a good lesson for us to learn. Acts 20, verse 34, Paul said this about himself. Yea, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. Now, Paul's a single man, so that really not that tough to do. But when a man has a wife and children, okay, he's got to provide for his family. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, if a man doesn't provide for his own household, he is worse than an infidel. Now, some of these men in his works will think it would be wrong, sinful, for them in the ministry to work a secular job. That's wrong. That's no faith. No, that's a brain. That's trying to take care of your family. And in fact, if a pastor is able to be paid full-time, I dare say he does need to still get out in the sun and get in the dirt. He needs to get out of that office, that air-conditioned office, and realize what life's about. He needs to realize what men in the church are going through, where you work today and then you... probably hurried up, and if you had a supper, get down here for church, you realize those sacrifices that people make. But if a man is stuck in his little cubicle, he tends to think that the world revolves around him, and then he gets mad at the people for not being there, not realizing they got a life and a family to support. And the trick we often saw in Colorado Springs is that when... there was a low crowd, the ones that were there got yelled at about the ones who weren't there. And I'm thinking, why are you yelling at us? Get on the phone and start yelling at those people. But that's the problem that's faced. So Paul said, have we not power to forbear working? Okay, when I started when I started down at Rensselaer, I was farming with my dad, a church of 11 people. What were they going to pay the pastor? Well, you can't get blood out of a turnip. So it's $50 a week. That's where I started. working on a farm, and that 50 would go right back in the church. Why? Because we needed a sacrifice. I am avid in trying to support missionaries in other cultures, and I admire Daniel Grokey that we just had that is willing to work in Norway when they can work. Most of them cannot. They're not allowed to. So I admire that, somebody like that. But home missions, I'm just not a real fan of. United States missions, guys starting church in our country. I'm thinking, get a job and sacrifice, if that's your desire. Even Jeremy Wilson, when he wanted to start a church in Picayune, Mississippi. Jeremy's my preacher boy, pretty much so. And he wanted to start a church in Picayune, and so I didn't financially support it at the beginning. Later on, we threw some cash that way, but people will respect somebody who sacrifices, and he's doing the job. And we appreciate that for him. Okay, and so Paul says he has power to forbear working, but he chose not to. And then he says, and then he's going to give an illustration. Okay, now he's in the Lord's ministry; he is a soldier of Jesus Christ. So he says, "Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges?" Okay, so the soldiers in the military, they don't have to pay for their guns and the ammunition and their equipment. No, somebody's paying for that. They're sacrificing, giving their time and their life to serve. So somebody else is paying for it. Who planteth a vineyard and eateth not of the fruit thereof? Okay, so a guy's going to plant a crop. He's got a crop. Well, he's going to eat from his own crop. Okay, and then, who feedeth a flock and eateth not of the milk of the flock? Okay, well, it's common sense. Say I these things as a man, or saith not the law the same also? So now he's going to go back to the Old Testament as an illustration. For it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth not God take care of the oxen? So in the Old Testament, they'd use an ox to harvest the crops, and they didn't put a muzzle on the ox. If he wanted to reach down and get an ear of corn, go for it. Don't muzzle the ox. Okay, in this context, he's using an ox as an analogy of a pastor. I'm glad he didn't use a jackass, but he used an ox as an analogy. In the Old Testament, it was forbidden to put an ox and an ass and a yoke together. Okay, praise the Lord. Okay, so it's interesting about oxen, though, and there's some pretty interesting analogies about oxen when they're plowing. When they're plowing and they come into a hard pan and they are having a tough time plowing, oxen will drop to their knees and go through the hard pan. Isn't that an illustration for us? Drop to his knees in prayer. Okay, and so that's the analogy he's giving. Okay, so then he says, or saith he it altogether for our own sakes. For our sakes, no doubt, that is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he that thresheth in hope should not be partaker of his hope. Or should be partaker of his hope. Okay, now, here we are, this passage. I really don't like talking about this stuff, you know, as far as what a church paying a pastor, because, you know, people of the flesh says, ulterior motives, all that stuff. Well, here we are with this passage, so we'll see what it says. Now, some fellas, there's a Filipino man that's been publishing. He's doing some translating work from the King James to a Filipino Bible. I've been corresponding with him for 2, 3, 4 years. I've sent him several Bibles, whatnot, and he's got to the point where they want to copyright their work. Okay, and so some will say, no copyrights. Some will say, yeah, but you need a copyright. If somebody's going to misuse your work in a fraudulent means, at least you have a resource. And then he says, well, we don't want to be making money upon this product. Well, it's not wrong to do that. It would not be wrong for them to make money off of their efforts. Now, they don't want to. I choose not to of the reference Bible. Okay, now I do have a copyright on it, But I have a PS on the copyright that a person has freedom to use this Bible and to copy it as they choose for honest reasons, but if for dishonest reasons, then it will be unlawful behavior. I choose to do that way. I don't, so we say, get paid. I'm going to let that go with eternity as far as retirement program. When we did the first edition, my dad and I were the ones that threw in the money at the beginning, and then I repaid dad. And I figured one edition, about 2,000 Bibles, and it's going to be done. I figured it'd be over. Well, if I could sell 2,000, it'd be amazing. And here we are sitting on the fourth edition. I never would have dreamed that. Okay, and it's self-supporting now because, you know, you want to have the price high enough in order to reprint, including the printing increases. Now, fortunately, it's amazing. Each one I've been finding, the printing has been less. And for the fifth edition, I found a better printer that's going to be one-third of the cost of the last one. But the binding is doubled. The first edition, the binding was $20 or so, and now it's $40, and it's going to go up some more. Okay, because I want a Bible that is what's called Smith-sewn, so it's quality, so it maintains good quality for a long, long time. Most Christian book companies will publish books and Bibles that the center part, the glue will dry out, and it'll bust up in less than 3 years, and that's including the lack of usage by Americans. Okay, and they do that on purpose, like to keep selling them. So it's not wrong. It is not wrong for a person who wrote a book for the Lord, and that they can make money off that. Okay, it's not wrong to do that, according to what Paul's writing here. It's like you don't muzzle the ox. So then he says, verse 11, if we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? Okay, the idea is the more you and I learn the Bible, some things that we do in the Bible will save us money. Okay, some things that Jan does for people in health has saved some people thousands of dollars in surgery. So we'll just take a tenth of what you saved. Okay? And so it's not wrong to reap some carnal things. Okay, so there's no sin in that. Granted, some guys want to get paid too much, but it's not wrong. Okay, verse 12, if others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power. Okay, Paul said, I've chosen not to do that. But suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that they which minister of holy things live of the things of the temple? Old Testament. So there's the illustration, Old Testament. And they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar. Okay, so Old Testament doctrine, they paid the temple priest. Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. So it's not wrong. It's not wrong. Okay, and so that's the idea. Now, if you would, let's try Philippians chapter 4. Now, we don't have a Jewish temple that we could go down to and give a sacrifice that goes, that's accounted directly to the Lord. Okay, so some churches where the finances are not open to folks, and if anybody wants to see our books, or anybody in this church wants to see them, I'll show them to you anytime you wish. Okay, anybody outside this church, they can take a flying leap to the moon. Okay, so, but some people are so... They have such a lack of confidence that they'll slip money to a missionary because if they give it to the church won't give it to them. I know of personal efforts of like where the guy will say from the pulpit, everything that's put in this offering plate will go to this missionary, and then it doesn't. They'll pay for some expense, go here, pay that. And so he lied. He lied is what he did. And so some people that recognize that's going on in churches, so they'll slip it to the person privately because they don't want it to be skimmed off because maybe the church, the pastor is worried about the finances. Okay, when I say everything and put in the offering goes to the missionary, it goes to him. I don't even count it. I just put it together or organize it and give it to him. Okay, and that's to me, that's the way it should be. Now, as a church, we do give a check from the church itself, and then the cash is like a icing on the cake form. Okay, but when a person does that, here's how God views it. Okay, like I said, in the Old Testament, they could actually go to the Jewish temple, and they could offer a sacrifice that's not required. Okay, free will offering. And God would account it to go directly to him. Okay, so can we do something like that in the New Testament? Philippians 4, verse 15, I would dare say is our illustration. Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. So this church was a very poor church, and surprisingly, poor folks tend to sacrifice more than rich folks. But that's just a kind of common thing because they're so grateful about things. But this Philippian church was a very poor church, but they were the only one of Corinth, Ephesus, Colossae, Thessalonians that sent Paul money, somehow got it to him, because they just felt led to do. So you're the only ones doing it. He says, for even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity. So here's over in another city. This is the two letters to the Thessalonians. You still sent a messenger with some coinage to me. And then he says, not because I desire a gift. That's not my motive. But I desire fruit, that ye may abound to your account. So they gave to him, but it goes to their account. That's how God looked at that. Okay, it's like in sports, who receives the trophy when they win a championship? Do the players? No, the owner does because he foot the bill. The players get rings, but the owner, the one who foots the bill. So what we're doing when we give to a missionary in another culture, we may not be called to go there, but we're delegating. We're delegating somebody else who has a calling, and we're being a partaker of their ministry. So at the judgment, when they're in front of the judgment seat, the Lord's saying, okay, here's what you got, but, whoa, watch this. And then it goes to other people that help support that missionary. How does God view that? The next verse says this, but I have all and abound. I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you. So there's the man that carried the gift. And here's what he called it, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. So in the New Testament, this is our way where we can go to the Jewish temple and offer a sacrifice, and it is counted directly to the Lord. Where in the New Testament, when we give it to somebody who taught the Bible to them, okay, where God accounts this to their account. Now the next verse, I believe, is a conditional verse that's attached to the previous verses. Because, he says, but, so that's going with the previous verses, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. So I dare say the promise of verse 19 is a conditional promise, okay, to the ones that gave this sweet sacrifice. Okay, and I'm not saying that God's not going to supply the need of others that don't do that, but I would dare say a person could rely upon that promise. Okay, 1 Corinthians 9, verse 14. I know Brent and Jen, as missionaries, they of their own selves support other missionaries personally. I don't know how much, but I know they have several that they do support. And I appreciate that and admire that. Okay, and obviously I have a strong tie with them, so I'm funneling money their way, but I'm doing it in a different method, so it, you know, all this stuff. And of course, Jen and I are always trying to do things for them, and we do for all our kids. You know, when we would go to Brent and Jen's in Toledo, you know, it was, you know, anything he needed done in the house, I would start doing it. He's not a real handy guy. He doesn't really like to do it, so I'd be glad to do it. And we must be doing something right because our daughter-in-law wants us to keep coming back. In fact, when we were down in Panama, here we are Friday night, going to leave Saturday morning, and Gabby and Jen sat us down. Okay, now when are you coming next time? And can you stay longer? Now that's a good sign. We must be doing something right when your daughter-in-law wants you back. Okay, why? Because we want to be a servant to them. And that's the way, I think, the best way to be a blessing to our adult children that have families. Where we're not going to be there and, okay, serve us, you know, and sit around and do nothing. I dare say we have two things that we do when we go to their houses. One, we try to be a servant to them, and the other one, we try to spoil the kids as much as we possibly can. That doesn't cross their path. But I personally kind of like going to Brent and Jen's when Jan and Lindsay's not with me, because that way I get much of the attention. When Lindsay's there, Jan and I don't get a whole lot of attention. But still, that's how it goes. Last time we were there, Judah said, "No, you got to play cards with me or tractors with me." Yeah. So verse 14, "Even so it hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. But I have used none of these things." So that was his personal choice. And as a single man, of course, he doesn't have to take care of wife and children. "Neither have I written these things that it should be so done unto me, for it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of." Well, that's a good idea. "For necessity is laid upon me, yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel." So he wants to preach the gospel. That's his motive. Now, this is a problem that sometimes missionaries have, okay, as the burden comes in. And as they travel, a missionary needs to really guard their children that they learn to be servants and not learn to expect to be served. Often in church, that's what happens. I remember one missionary boy about 10 years old said to my wife in the kitchen, "I need some water." What did she do? There's the glass. There's the faucet. Get it yourself. And that's what they need to do. They need to serve themselves. Okay, that is a problem, but again, and so we can try to, you know, be a help. And our obligation for missionaries is to be an encouragement to them. Okay, Bible believing missionaries that travel around going from church to church are going to very small churches. Bible believers are not. You can ask my sister. And she's right back there. Okay, and they see a church, Mike, every 4 years, and they see some very sad things. Where church was thriving, and now it's maybe down to 20 people. Okay, and so you know, we are not held accountable to the missionaries as far as how they respond. We are held accountable of how to try to be a blessing to them. Okay, and so there we are, verse 16, verse 17. "For if I do this thing willingly," okay, that's our intent. "If I do this thing willingly, I have a reward." Now, we could take that verse and jump into chapter 9 of 2 Corinthians And most pastors, or many pastors, I won't say most, but many pastors, they like Jerry Falwell. Do you remember Jerry Falwell? Boy, could that guy drum up money. Boy, could he. I mean, a 30-minute broadcast, at least 10 of it was trying to support the broadcast. Okay, but some of these guys, were, especially if they got a deep debt, they will put so much pressure on their people to give. And people will give out of guilt, manipulation, but the Lord only rewards the ones who willingly give. And so there's where the reward is given, verse 17, willingly. And it says, but if against my will a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. So there's the very first time that word shows up in the Bible. Dispensation. Found four times. Okay, it's a dispensing. In this context, a dispensing of the gospel is committed unto me. Okay, and you can get into the eye of dispensations better when we go to Ephesians 3 if we get into that. So then he says, verse 18, what is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. So again, that's Paul's methods of following here. Okay, sometimes, you know, if I cross a JW, you know, I'll try to give them a track or something, you know, just for fun. And JWs often try to get money for their tracks when they go to houses. They want to get paid. So if I cross them on the street or at my house, I'll give them a track. I say, could I have a quarter for that? You know, just kind of tweak them a little bit. You know, but Paul says he wants to do without charge. Okay, then he says, for though I be free from all men... Boy, that's something. That's a blessing. Though I be free from all men, yet made I myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. So the idea is you want to create an association, a common ground, but you don't want to compromise to get that common ground. You want to have an agreement, a common ground with that party, okay? And with young people, that common ground is goofing off with them. Okay, when I go to camp, I have a good time. Sometimes you'll see some of the adults are around a table. You know, we go with the kids. I go swimming with them, play basketball with them, you know, shoot water balloons at them. Man, they have a great game. And they use these things to shoot water balloons. They had 8,000 water balloons. And they're shooting about 100 yards, and there were some injuries. And I got Lucas, hit him right in the gut, at about a 100-yard shot. But I'm surprised more of them don't get really injured bad. And... that's what kids, they want to see somebody, what children, teenagers are looking at, they're looking at consistency and joy. Do you have joy? Are you a pleasure to be around? Okay, not saying we have to drop our position in life, but they're looking for somebody who's consistent. They can spot a phony. And they want to see somebody that has joy. Why would they want what we have if we're not joyful around them? Why would they want that? So that's what they got to see. And we goof off with them. Okay, when they're little, you get down and play the toys with them. And tickle them. You know, and like my dad, bite their ear until they scream. You know, that's what my dad used to do to me, so I do it to my grandkids. Okay, and... okay, so verse 21, to them that are without the law, as without the law, being not without the law to God, but under the law to God, that I might gain them that are without the law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. So he's getting a common, this man has to be well-rounded. He has to be a very flexible person. But again, he's not compromise. He's not getting drunk to win the drunk. Okay? He is becoming like these people to get a common ground with them. And he says, "For this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be a partaker thereof with you." So that's Paul's pattern. Verse 24, the last four verses, gets into what I think is probably the toughest crown to earn. It's the uncorruptible crown. It's taking care of our physical body. And it gets into health stuff, you know, and stuff like that. And so I'll stop there, verse 23. Any questions or comments?